It's a return to WGN from our friend Brad Meltzer. He has written thousands of books, all of them slices of history that maybe you did or did not know. Last we spoke, I think it was The Nazi Conspiracy. That book made a splash, New York Times bestseller. Now with Josh Mensch, he's written The JFK Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill Kennedy and Why It Failed. Brad, welcome back to WGN. How are you?
I'm good, my friend. Thank you for having me back.
What turned you on to this book? And by the way, the timing of this interview is very interesting. What with the conversation about the release of the MLK, the RFK, and the JFK files? I'll ask you about that in a little bit. But what first turned you on to this JFK story?
You know, it just was a story I'd never heard. And, you know, you and I have spoken about our book, The Lincoln Conspiracy, about a plot to kill Abraham Lincoln before. Yeah. He took office, and the Nazi conspiracy. And we're like, how do you top the Nazi conspiracy? A plot to kill FDR, Stalin, and Churchill. And then we found, and just to paint the picture, this moment with JFK. And it's 1960. This is 3 years before Lee Harvey Oswald. JFK, it's a Sunday morning, and he's on his way to church. What he has no idea is that there's a retired postal worker named Richard Pavlik who wants to kill him and has packed his car with 7 sticks of dynamite. And Pavlik followed JFK to Florida, Palm Beach, because he thinks JFK's security is worse there, which he's right about. As JFK leaves his house that Sunday morning, all this assassin has to do is hit the little trigger device he's built, and boom, will go the dynamite. And what saves his life, I don't want to ruin it for you, but it has to do with Jackie. And it's the beginning of one of the craziest JFK stories you've never heard in your life.
Yeah, there is a moment where he, for a particular reason, loses his will to kill Kennedy and anybody around him. And I guess it's not spoiling the book to say that this plot failed. We know that this is not the way Kennedy died, but here is one way that Kennedy just slipped through the jaws of death. In fact, you start the book. Why did you do this? I spoke a little while ago, Brad, about how you spend a couple of chapters at the beginning of the book talking about his days in the war. And it's really gripping stuff. But what does that have to do with this moment in history later on? I'm glad you included it, but I wonder why you did.
Yeah, because, you know, you see him in World War II become a hero, saves his, you know, fellow sailors, puts a man who's unconscious on his back, swims with him for miles on his back with a rope in his teeth, dragging this man behind him, swims to one island, says, I'm going to find another island because we're going to die here, swims to the next island, comes back and says, I found a better island. They said, well, how are we going to get this unconscious guy? He says, put him on my back. I'm the best swimmer. Does it again and again. And when he leaves World War II, his father can get him out. He says, no, Dad, I'm not done fighting. The Nazis aren't done, and the Japanese haven't been beaten. I'm going back, and goes back into World War II.
Yeah,
he's incredible, right?
It was a John McCain moment.
The reason it really is, right? And the reason we show it is because we also show him cheating on Jackie. We document his affairs. We show you that when Jackie goes into labor and she's giving birth and hemorrhaging, JFK is nowhere to be found, and. So is he good? Is he bad? Is he like the rest of us? You know, we want to show you the highest morals and the lowest, because the book is about him and Jackie as people. And, John, you know, the thing that I was struck with is I kept asking myself as we were writing it, where's Camelot? Why do we call it Camelot? Did Camelot come in year one or two? Here's what I discovered. It's not until after JFK dies that we start calling it Camelot. It's after he's assassinated, Jackie grants one interview to Life magazine, and she tells the reporter this exclusive story that when JFK was alive in the White House and his back was hurting him and he couldn't calm down, he was trying to get comfortable, to put him to sleep, she would put on this record, a favorite song from a favorite play about a place called Camelot. Jackie's the one who put that word into the lexicon. We forget that she was a reporter. So she was a member of the press in the start of her career. She was hounded by the press, but make no mistake, she was a master of the press. And I think my wife said when she read this book, her favorite parts of it, yes, the JFK World War II stuff, but the parts about Jackie. And then, then they're not cliches anymore. They're real people again.
Yeah. You reminded us of the age difference. Was it 8 years between him and her. I mean, she was very young. And while she was poised and smart and witty, she was also physically frail at times, particularly given the trouble she had with some of her pregnancies. But she was a very young woman.
And not only young, but, you know, I would say the word naive, but I don't know if anyone, you know, anyone see this coming. Right as they get engaged, one of JFK's, my stories in there that I broke me is, one of JFK's closest friends comes up to Jackie right after they're engaged and says, you know, Jack loves women. Basically says to her face, he's going to keep cheating on you. And Jackie is the one who has to hold this together. She's also the one that, because she speaks Spanish, they're like, wait a minute, we could target the Hispanic community. We can target another community. And it's, they're so savvy. And we, you know, we tell the story now that when Nixon lost to JFK, it's because Nixon was sweating on the debates and JFK was handsome, and we, that's the shorthand. But that's a simplified version. But really, yes, that happened. But the reason JFK also wins is because he understands how to use this new medium, television, and make it work for him. And, you know, it, that is, to me, an amazing part of what Jack and Jackie figure out. Is
yeah, and what a secret weapon she was. And what a secret weapon she was. She at one point, because the politicians of the day did not go out of their way to court the black or Hispanic vote. And there's JFK talking in an impoverished area to Spanish-speaking people, and he says, here's my wife, and then she addresses them in Spanish. She was fluent in many languages, and that was a great asset for him and for her. Yeah, you said that that Jackie knew about John's affairs before, during, and after their marriage, and that was just the way he was going to play. The thing, though, you intimated that broke her heart the most, though, was when, during her pregnancy, just before she's supposed to deliver, right? And now it's an emergency delivery. Where is her husband? He is on a sailing vacation in Europe. Imagine your wife is 8.5 months pregnant, and you say, you know what, I'm going to go sailing with my buddies in Europe, and let me know how it goes. And that hurt her feelings. And you're right, there are times where you think JFK is the greatest, warmest, smartest, most heroic guy, and other times you think he's just a cad of his day.
And that's you know, at the end of the day, I think we do, you know, when we talk about Jackie, we say, oh, she's got grace, she's got style. We talk about JFK, he's so handsome, he's so this, or he's so, or like you said, a cad. And again, I think it's so important to, we do them a disservice when we turn them into cheap caricatures. And I think, you know, JFK does do incredible things, takes us to the moon, unleashes hope like never before, you know, and then he does these terrible things. And I think for, they are, for better or worse, Jack and Jackie are the first celebrity president and first lady. And I don't mean famous, because Abraham Lincoln's famous, others are famous, but all presidents are famous. But celebrity in that way we define it now, that Hollywood version of fame and money and all that stuff. And
I think that, keep going, Brad.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that I think that we've been chasing that since JFK and Jackie. And for some people, it's the Reagans. And for some people, it's, you know, the Obamas. And for others, it is the Trumps. And all of them are cosplaying JFK and Jackie. And the one thing that we tried to really make come across in the book is it's a hollow pursuit. Not just because fame is hollow, which of course it is, but because Camelot didn't exist. It wasn't real. It was something we hoped was real, and we've been chasing ever since. But what JFK did do, though, is he gave us hope. And my God, that's what we need as a country right now.
By the way, if you're a Mamie Eisenhower fan, this is not the book for you. This is not the book for you. Some people come off as ever so human, but also not entirely sympathetically in your book. The JFK Conspiracy is the Brad Meltzer book about this secret plot to kill Kennedy. One of the things that you should also just reflect on briefly, Brad, is the fact that one of the reasons this guy, it appears, was out to kill Kennedy was because he was a Catholic, and this guy is anti-Catholic at a time when anti-Catholicism was ripe in this country, right?
I love you for that, John. I mean, that's the context that's really also important. I know it's titillating for me to come on here and say we found a secret plot to kill JFK that nobody knows about. But the reason we tell these stories, and the reason you and I have talked all this, you know, over these years, is because of what it says about where we are right now. And in 1960, Nixon versus Kennedy, the country was bitterly divided. Whatever side you were on, you thought the other side were horrible, awful people. Does that sound familiar to you? It's exactly where we are. And as you said, the killer, this guy Richard Pavlik, hated the fact that JFK was Catholic. And there were major religious leaders, who were determined to say, we can't have a Catholic in the White House. The Reverend Norman Vincent Peale, who wrote The Power of Positive Thinking, even the Reverend Billy Graham, they thought in their eyes that if, and this sounds almost silly now, but back then, if JFK was Catholic, he was going to be more loyal to the Pope than he would to the United States. And they were like, we can't have him be in the White House. And at the same time, separately, the KKK made a resurgence.
Yeah.
And in the 20s, the KKK realized that they could expand their dues and their membership by expanding that circle of hate. So they started hating not just the Black community, but the Jewish community and the immigrant community. And they saw JFK as an Irish Catholic immigrant, and no way can we have an Irish Catholic immigrant be in the White House. And when you put that much venom out about people, you can't be surprised when someone gets activated. And Richard Pavlik was listening, and he got activated. And he was like, I'm going to be a good American, and I'm going to make sure JFK never gets to the White House.
So you have an immigrant whose religion is under fire, and it's very easy to imagine that somebody might just be so motivated by that messaging. So he goes to a store in New Hampshire and buys dynamite. Boy, that was a different age. And the blasting caps. And they kind of ask him, well, what are you doing here? And he goes, I got some tree stumps. I don't think you can go to a hardware store right now and buy a bunch of dynamite, can you?
Not anymore. We don't do that anymore, right? Especially not. Obviously, changes were made after this, but also Oklahoma City, you can't go buy seven. You know, this guy bought 10 sticks of dynamite. If you want to blow up tree stumps, you need one or two. The 10 that he bought, according to the guy who sold them, said he could blow up an entire forest. So, but they didn't say anything. They didn't report him. And I talked to the Secret Service about this, and when you talk to the Secret Service, they explained to me that presidential assassins divide into two different kind of categories. There are hunters and there are howlers. And howler makes a lot of noise, says, I'm coming to kill you. I want the president dead. But they rarely take action. A hunter, though, is very different. A hunter rarely says a word, and they're the ones who tend to pull the trigger. And if you look throughout history at the four men who have successfully killed presidents, from Abraham Lincoln to JFK, all four of them are hunters. And Richard Pavlik, in this book, he thinks he's a hunter, but he's also a bit of a howler, and he opens his mouth to the wrong person, and of course leads to the twist of why he gets caught.
So he's following JFK's travels in his car, and he's got this dynamite in the car, and the plan is, and by the way, you say the dynamite's in the trunk, and he drills a hole in the back of the car so that the blasting wire can go from the trunk to the front seat, and he can trigger it. So he's going to... It's a suicide mission, but he feels that he'll be doing the country a favor if he can get rid of this moneyed Catholic president. So he's just kind of following him around. And it's interesting how close he was able to get to Kennedy. I suppose one of the complications for the Kennedys, one of the reasons it was easy even in that era to do it, is because they were such celebrities. The press was always reporting on their comings and goings and doings. And it would not have been difficult to know where Kennedy was going to be at any given time, right?
And listen, we still make the president's daily schedule available if you want it. It's still, it used to be pre-9/11, it used to be on the website. You can just go click on it. Now it's a little hard to find, but you can still find it. But back then, they weren't ready for that. And they also weren't ready for a president like Kennedy. There was a word that became popular again in the early 50s. And it didn't start existing then, but it took over in this world called teenager. And, people moved back then. If you were, your dad was a butcher, you became a butcher. Your dad worked with metal, you worked with metal. But when people moved to the suburbs and they started getting more schools, it became the most educated group of young people in American history. And they didn't want their dad's job, and they certainly didn't want their dad's president. And with JFK, he was different than Eisenhower. Eisenhower would come off the plane they'd say, walk off the plane, sir, go to the car, and that's what the schedule says. So Eisenhower would come off the plane, walk to the car. JFK would come off the plane, and he would see there's a crowd of people waiting, cheering him by the fence. So he'd race over to the fence, and the Secret Service look at each other. What do? Oh, now we got to go protect him by the fence. And he's kissing babies and shaking babies and doing everything you do with babies. And that's what politicians do now. But JFK was all in. Yeah. And when they finally get to Florida, the Secret Service are standing there trying to guard him in Florida, sitting in the Florida sun in their suits. And JFK goes over to one of them and says, hey, man, what size shirt do you wear? Walks inside, comes outside with a short sleeve shirt and gives it to him. The Secret Service have barely been guarding this guy for 24 hours, and they're already wearing his clothes. This is not your dad's president that they're dealing with. So dealing with that schedule and all those changes, they didn't see what was coming.
Yeah, it's interesting to make that point about Kennedy's youth and vitality, because as much as age has been an issue in the last election, it was an issue in that election in that it was felt that Kennedy was too young, but his youth worked ultimately in his favor because young people liked him. He had this kind of energy that Eisenhower neither had nor projected. And here's just the kind of book you write. There's a factoid in there that I wrote down. In 1920, only 30% of teenagers were in high school. That number changed dramatically by the time Kennedy became a candidate. Now we're upwardly mobile. People get education. They're not just going to go be a butcher like their dad was. In 1920, only 30% of teenagers were in high school. Rather, they were doing the work of the family. Times change. Kennedy was the face of that. He becomes the president. Now there's this guy who's following him, doesn't like him, has got a car full of dynamite. And when he has his chance, because he staked him out, he doesn't pull the trigger, eventually gets caught. Why didn't he pull the trigger? How did he get caught? I'll let you read the book, finish it at home. It's called The JFK Conspiracy. And it's another winner, Brad. It's nice to talk to you again.
Always appreciate you, and thank you for supporting us in every medium we do.
Hey, by the way, I got about 45 seconds left. Any thoughts on the release of the JFK files?
Of course. Of course. Listen, I'm a board member on the National Archives Foundation. We all want these files out there. I mean, we all want to read them. My personal belief is it's 1% of the files are left. I don't think it's going to be the smoking gun. I hope I'm wrong, but I think it's just going to be exactly what people have said, which is certain names of people that we were trying to hide, certain ways that we did things militarily back then. But I'm happy that it's in the sunlight. We should all know that story. We all want to know that story.
Will it be embarrassing to the CIA, some people by name then?
I don't think it's embarrassing as much as I think it's for safety. I mean, I think there are people who potentially are still alive who were, whether they were informants for us or no one knew. That's why you keep these things hidden. It's not because there's a grand conspiracy, but because you don't want someone taking revenge because they find out you were the secret source giving information to the U.S. government.
Brad Meltzer's The JFK Conspiracy. We'll talk again. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, my friend.